I do this for my culture. So right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us this evening. Folks, we got a lot to talk about tonight. First and foremost, happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. Very excited about tonight's show, as we got so much on the agenda for tonight. We're going to be having a conversation about today's State of the State address that came from Annapolis from the governor of Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan. We're going to talk about that. Also at the 5:30 mark, I'm going to have a chit-chat with Baltimore City State's Attorney, Miss Marilyn Mosby. She's going to be joining us live in studio to give us some insight about a few things. And then later we'll talk about how Gayle King has received some backlash about Kobe Bryant. Is it too early to talk about his rape case? We're going to have that discussion. And then later we'll talk about the great migration of Baltimore. And we'll be chatting with Baltimore Magazine's Ron Cassie. All right, folks, let's jump right into it because we got a lot to discuss here this evening. First and foremost, we got to give you an update about what has just happened in Washington, D.C. It is official, folks. The impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump is officially over, and it was voted. And guess what, folks? He is acquitted. That's right. President Trump has been acquitted of both charges, of both articles of impeachment, of abuse of power. He's also been acquitted of the issue of trying to use his political power for personal gain. Absolutely mind-blowing. Mind-blowing, to say the least. This is the third time in history that the president that a president of the United States has been acquitted. And so that is what we're seeing right now. He has been acquitted on all counts. Again, he is not guilty of abuse of power and not guilty of obstruction of justice. Man, oh man. So we will see how things continue to happen with that. And certainly we will. You know, I don't think it was a real big surprise. I mean, they have been talking about this was going to happen from the very beginning. The Republican Party said that they were going to stand in solidarity with their candidate, with their president. And so I'm not necessarily surprised, folks. I'm not surprised at all. The only Republican senator that decided to move forward with not going along with this was Senator Mitt Romney. And he explained his vote to talk about wanting to move forward to convict the president. And he said that he had to draw a line in the sand, that he did not want to move forward on acquittal, that the president did do some wrongdoing, that the president should be removed from office. Only man from the party. They had a very, very interesting relationship between the president and Mitt Romney, and so it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. But we won't talk about too much tonight, but we certainly just wanted to keep you up to date about the ladies and coming out of Washington, D.C. Speaking of politics, as last night the president gave his State of the Union address, today Governor Larry Hogan gave the State of the State address in Maryland. He calls it the people's priority. This is the sixth state of the state address that the governor has given for his term. And he says that this is the state address that it will address the issues of the people. Tonight, I want to just talk a little bit about some of the things that he discussed in his state of the state address. I want to share with you just a couple of quick clips of what the governor had to say as it relates to everything from what he saw the change in leadership with bringing on House Speaker Speaker Jones, Bill Ferguson, bringing them into the fold of leadership, but more importantly, how he plans to address the issue of crime and violence that has riddled Baltimore in over the past year. I want to play the package of, we have a few clips from his address. Check this
now,
out.
Now, every issue that I've talked about here today and all of the bills that you will be considering over the next 61 days are important and worthy of debate and discussion. But none of them are as important as addressing the out-of-control violent crime, the shootings and murders that are destroying Baltimore City. In October, a 2-year-old boy was riding in the car with his family on a Saturday morning when he was shot in the stomach. Last month, a 73-year-old grandmother was shot and killed after being caught in gang crossfire near the apartment complex where she lived. 12 people were recently shot and 5 people killed in just one night. More than 1,000 people were shot on the streets of Baltimore City last year. 348 people were killed. Another 60 people have been shot, and 23 people have been killed just in the 29 days since this legislative session began. One concerned Baltimore City resident recently said of the violence, "I don't know if prayers help, but we need prayers." Now, I'm a big believer in the power of prayer. And yes, we do need prayers, but prayers are not enough. We also are going to need you to take action to get these shooters off our streets. If you do not consider any other legislation, and if you accomplish nothing else, in the next 61 days, pass the Violent Firearm Offenders Act of 2020.
That was just the opening of Governor Larry Hogan's address for the state of the state, as he started to talk a little bit about the very urgent crisis, as he calls it, of violence in Baltimore City. Now I want you to hear what his recommendations are for some of the solutions to resolve this issue of violence in Baltimore. Check this out.
This increases penalties for those who use guns to commit violent crimes, toughens penalties for those who possess stolen firearms and guns with obliterated serial numbers, and those who use, possess, or supply illegal guns to violent criminals, and pass the Witness Intimidation Prevention Act, which toughens penalties for those who intimidate and threaten witnesses, and the Judicial Transparency Act, because the public has a right to know about the sentences that judges are giving to the most violent offenders.
So the governor has offered or is advocating for the passage of 3 acts in this package of bills to help deal with the issue of violence in the city of Baltimore. The first one with the Violent Firearms Offender Act, which deals with the possession of illegal firearms. The second is the Witness Intimidation Prevention Act, which is to come harder, to have stiffer penalties for those who intimidate witnesses in key murder cases. And then finally, the Judicial Transparency Act, so that the people, the constituents, we can know exactly what's going on with these cases as they go through the process. I want to get your thoughts on this. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. The governor spoke on a host of issues, of course, including education and transportation. But crime and violence in the city of Baltimore was like the touchstone of the governor's State of the State address. And I want to get your thoughts about this. You could join me online at Faraji Muhammad right now on Facebook as we're broadcasting live. And then, of course, you can hit us up on 410-319-8888 to have your comments heard on air. I want to go to the calls right now. And I want to hear from Clarence. And then we got Simon from Park Heights. Clarence, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take on what the governor had to say, Clarence?
Yeah, I listened to it, Faraji. I have more of a question as about it than an opinion. I'm just curious about, we know about three strikes, you're out. Now, anybody can be, you know, I'm just thinking of circumstances that would drive a person into using a handgun or committing a violent crime with a gun. That person doesn't necessarily have to be a career criminal. So how do we make a distinction, and I think there needs to be a distinction between a violent person who's just a habitual criminal who's going to use a gun repeatedly, as opposed to that one person who just makes a terrible mistake where it becomes one strike, you're out, and that becomes a vehicle for fueling the prison industrial complex. Do you have to be careful about what we enact here and how we make it applicable to individuals that you know, get caught up breaking the law in that fashion, you know?
Yeah.
Okay? So one other thing, if I may, Faraji, you know, this is my personal opinion for your generation, people your age. Like, man, we don't need people my age, 71, filling seats in congressional seats anymore, you know? That person needs to be of your generation, because me will be dead and gone, and you'll be stuck with a senior citizen. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Clarence, for checking in from Park Heights. All right, Simon, what's your take on this? State of the State.
Peace, Faraji.
Peace, Simon.
My take on it is that I listen, and I think the governor's very progressive. I think that for too long, I'm going to tell you the truth. I think for too long, the Democrats in this area of the country are so relaxed and so comfortable, and they're not doing anything. You know, I've been voting for, I'm in my late 60s, and I've been voting for Democrats all my life and ain't got nothing out of it. Mm. And the Democrats that have been in office all this time, we just keep putting the same people in office and we keep getting the same results. And then we want the governor to do something about the violence in Baltimore. I too, am a firm believer in the power of prayer. But I'm going to tell you that I don't believe the people out here committing these acts of violence, repeated acts of violence. I mean, the record speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
They go before judges and they get a slap on the wrist. And they come out and they don't even take the slap on the wrist as a blessing. They come out and do the same thing again, you know, because they're getting away with it and there aren't any consequences for it.
Right.
And because of that, they're emboldened. Mm. They'll just come out in broad daylight and do whatever it is they do. And they don't expect to get caught. And if they get caught, they don't expect no consequences.
Yeah, that's.
And I think that needs to stop.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
I think it needs to stop. And when you get somebody with an obliterated serial number on their handgun, you need to treat them like somebody that is out to kill somebody, because why else do you obliterate a serial number from your gun?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, you gotta act like we got some common sense here.
Hey,
Simon. And we're not acting like it.
Yeah, Simon, I gotta
stop
you right
like
there.
We're dummies.
I gotta stop you there. And I hear you loud and clear. I wanna make sure I get as many of your calls on this. But you're right. You're right. There has to be a real effort for this. Let's go back to the phone lines, 410-319-8888. The governor's talked about in his State of the State address earlier today about some of the ways that he wants to address dealing with violent crime. He urged the Maryland General Assembly, the legislators, the state legislators, to pass a set of bills, that would lead to, he believes, make a dent, or at least, in this issue of violent crime in the city of Baltimore. The Violent Firearms Offenders Act, the Witness Intimidation Prevention Act, and the Judicial Transparency Act. Nothing, this is no frills. This is just institutionalizing things that we have been talking about in terms of violent firearms. The Violent Firearms Offender Act deals with the possession of illegal firearms, tracking them down. The Witness Intimidation Act dealing with those having stiffer penalties on those who intimidate witnesses, which we know is a big thing in Baltimore City, which is why we don't get the murder solved in this city. And then, of course, the Judicial Transparency Act, which is a way for us as the constituents to know where these cases are in the process. So let's go back to the line. Let me hear from Al in Woodlawn. Al, talk to me. What's your take?
Peace, Kane.
Peace.
I'm gonna say this. No, 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 no. Here we are again. Let's go back in time to 1991, 92, when everybody was saying, oh, man, it's crime, crime, crime. What's the answer? What's the answer? What we got to do? Oh, we got to get tougher. We got to put more stiffer penalties. We got to add more time. And what ended up happening, you have an increase in what? Mass incarceration. You know what's funny to me?
Yeah.
Whenever we talk about issues or whatever, problems as far as crime with black people, we talk about stiffer penalties. Mm-hmm. When we talk about crime with police, they'll never talk about increasing the penalties for police brutality. What do they always go to? Training, 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 training.
Yeah.
The only, in my opinion, the only solution to this crime issue is education. When I say education, I don't mean sitting in class talking about algebra. I'm talking about a total revamp of our educational system. We need conflict resolution classes. And I'm not talking about some class or elective that you take in 12th grade. The same way we've been taking social studies and math and all that since third grade,
yeah.
Conflict resolution, problem solving needs to be a course in class, starting from first grade all the way through 12th grade.
And then I hear you. And I hear you. So what do we do about those who popping the guns off right now, though?
It's nothing you can do. And it's unfortunate that I'm saying that, but that generation, the people who are committing the crimes right now, they are lost. There's not a penalty that's going to be inflicted that's going to change the mind of a person that's going to do murder. There's a saying in the streets, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. That's a mentality. There's no, if you increase the murder penalty from 25 years to 50 to 100 to infinity, that does not change that mentality. They would rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Hey,
I'd rather be caught with it.
I got to let you go. I hear you. Let's go to Melanie in Baltimore. Melanie, talk to me, ma'am. What's your take?
Hi. So the previous caller had some very good points. And I think the issue is we are looking at a multifaceted problem, trying to give it a one-size-fits-all solution. Dealing with crime is only going to be a Band-Aid. So we're going to stop crime in one capacity, but the issue that caused the crime in the community in the first place will not go away, which is going to give a new generation of crime. So just penalizing the criminal without changing policy, bringing jobs to the community, uplifting and building the community, giving people home ownership and a sense of pride, building families, dealing with drug issues, bringing food into the community and opportunities, and changing the school system altogether, taking those pride programs out of the public schools and putting them into a private, not private, but their own sector within the school system so that those who do not have emotional issues are being educated without being impacted by that and really treating those emotional issues. If we're not doing things like that, all we're doing is it's going to be mass incarceration, like you said, with no real solution.
Okay.
It's not going to change crime because what causes crime is not guns. Guns are a result. And crime is a result of a whole plethora of issues.
Sure. Melanie, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for checking in from Baltimore City. Let's go to Rob out of Baltimore County. Rob, what's your take on this? The governor is looking to use legislation. I mean, that's the options, that's the resources that he has at his disposal outside
Hello?
Of... Rob, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I would say the governor is looking to use legislation as a way to address this issue of crime and violence in Baltimore, because that is the option that he has in his disposal outside of taking a more aggressive stance where he can call for more law enforcement officers. He can call for the state police. What are your thoughts about what he's proposing earlier today?
Well, first, Brother Farazi, I'm going to start by saying that I haven't heard anything that any of your callers have said in front of me that I disagree with in the least. I totally agree with everything that everybody said, especially that one brother, Jeffrey, and the sisters just got on after him, and she talked about the need for, just bringing in jobs. I'm going to double down on that. But, as a social studies teacher in a middle school down in Montgomery County, I look at things from a historical perspective. And when I watched our governor's State of the State address, it almost made me it was almost reminiscent of, like, watching a closing argument in a criminal case, except that my mind kind of juxtaposed back to, like, the 1800s when people were arguing about the value of black folks in court of law, mm-hmm. where they were talking about mass incarceration of these newly emancipated people. And then here we are, when we talked about the 90s with the whole mass incarceration thing, now we beat the drums again. But everything, this is all a huge distraction. What we truly need in this state, especially Baltimore and PG County, is more job training programs. We also need a whole a concerted effort towards expunging many of these young men's records. Now, I'm not going to say you can commit a crime and kill somebody and give them a clean record, but if they were able to somehow roll into a program and maybe earn credit towards college or even towards an actual legitimate job with real skills, and they can maybe get expunged after 5, 10 years, whatever, you just turn that person to a taxpaying citizen. And better yet, if you can somehow link a program like that to all these vacant homes or home ownership, none of these guys have something vested. But we don't do that. All we focus on is incarceration and punishment when it comes to black folks. And like the brother said before, training when it comes to some police officer who's probably going to make the same mistake they always make with us.
Rob,
our lives are never held in the same value as others.
And I understand that. But isn't the thing is that if you are one of the 348 families that have been impacted by violence, rehabilitation look like to you as being a victim of violence versus those who are reading about you being a victim of violence are two different things. I think that for those families that have been impacted by violence last year, those 348 families, I don't think that it's just about, rehabilitation. They want justice for the person that they lost, their loved one that they lost. So how do you reconcile that sentiment without being in a space where you want to be overly aggressive in the incarceration of black men and women? That's the question. That's the big question, folks. And so if we're talking about, unless we impact it, and I'm just saying, like, if you are a family member and you have been impacted by violence, if you're a mother that has lost their one son, two sons, three sons, or niece or nephew in the streets of Baltimore, we got to think about it. What does justice look like for those families, and not just for those of us who are hearing about this, but those of us who are actually living in this condition day in and day out? I think that's the other part of the conversation that we cannot and we must not forget. Folks, I got to take my first break. When we come back, we're going to have our one-on-one conversation with the top prosecutor here in the city of Baltimore, Baltimore City State's Attorney, Miss Marilyn Mosby. She's going to talk to us a little bit about crime, some of the work she's doing to get the next generation involved in the legal process, and so much more. So stay riding with me. My conversation with Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby is up next on For the Culture on WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Culture.
Welcome back to For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us this evening. Folks, there are so many things that we've been talking about as it relates to this issue of crime and violence. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up that I just brought up before we went to our break was, as much as we're having these conversations about violence, that some people say, some of you are saying, look, prosecution and extra law enforcement, these things are not the key. What do we say to the 348 families that have been impacted by violence last year? How do we make sure that these families are given the justice that they deserve? Now, am I an advocate for these policies? No, I'm just simply saying, I'm trying to say, well, there are a couple of different things that need to be addressed here. There are a couple of different things. And I understand the traditional and the historic oppression in terms of when it comes to black men and women in this city or in this country, that the first conversation about dealing with crime as it relates to black people has been stiffer penalties. I understand that dynamic, but what do we say to the 348 families? What do we say to the families that have already been violated because their loved one has been lost in the streets right now? Give me a call, 410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phone lines. Who we have? Miss Diane, and then we got Sean. Miss Diane, talk to me. What's your take?
Hey, brother Farage, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm blessed. First, before I talk, what happened to the election yesterday? I want to know what happened, why people didn't come out and vote the way they should have voted.
You know what, Ms. Diane? Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure. I mean, I don't know if it was a confusion about it. Some people claim that they didn't know about
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say.
I mean, I'm a chief judge, and I worked it, you know, and I'm like, where are the people? And one lady did come in and said that if it wasn't for her neighbor, she wouldn't have known.
Wow,
that's awful. I mean, that's very awful. I mean, you just talked about the governor. I want to piggyback on what some of your callers are saying. We are not addressing the root issue. I understand about people, you know, losing their loved one, but the police is not doing their job, because if you heard me before last week, if you can find a killer for another ethnic group, but when it comes to African American people that are getting killed, you do not find their killer, and it'd be years, some unsolved, some are decades old, that they have not found the killer of the person. We want to be treated just like everybody else. If you're going after the person that killed a white person, do the same thing for a black person. Put all that manpower behind that, and when you do it, write it up so when they do go to court, judges cannot do what they are doing. They're making deals with criminals without our knowledge on the back. You know, we're on the front end, but then when we get it, we got everybody hollering about, oh, you know who killed somebody, 2 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Faraji. I'm in there being asleep sometime, okay?
Right,
I'm in my house, and you talking to me like this. You're saying, oh, you know who it is. And sometimes the streets are not talking the way they used to talk.
Well, that's one of the things that, and what you're saying, Ms. Diane, and I appreciate you as always for checking in. That's why the governor had is urging the state legislators to pass the Judicial Transparency Act. That's what he said. The Judicial Transparency Act. And this is a bill, folks, that is focused on providing some level of accountability, of some level of transparency. He said the public has a right to know about how our criminal justice system deals with violent offenders, and that the Judicial Transparency Act of 2020 will require the State Commission on Criminal Sentencing Policy to track and publish detailed information on the sentences that are handed down by judges for violent crimes. Is this not needed? Let's go back to the line. Sean, talk to me, sir. Thank you for checking in.
How you doing, Faraji?
I'm good, Sean.
Good. I just wanted to address that question you had about what justice may look like to the affected families.
Yep.
And I've been thinking about that for a long time. And I've come up with what I think might end up being an interesting idea. I don't know how many people will accept it. But do you remember the Dawson family?
Oh, I can't forget them. I can't forget them. The five members of the family in East Baltimore that was killed by a Molotov cocktail because the mother decided that she wanted to speak out against drug dealers who wanted to sell drugs in front of her door.
Okay. All right. So with that said, I had thought of an initiative called the Dawson Panel. And it would go a little bit like this. Somebody who's on trial for victimizing, an individual, if that individual had happened to perish or whatever, the Dawson panel would actually end up being like, I guess you can either say a delegate for the family or representative of the family, where they directly get to decide the fate of that individual should they get convicted. So let's just say the individual gets convicted, and the delegate would be given a menu of options of, either sentences or otherwise that they can actually choose from. That way the family is directly involved in, getting the justice that they feel like they deserve for their loved one. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Yep. I do see that. So it's an accountability panel. Is that if I'm understanding you correctly, Sean, is that the case?
Well, yeah, but I was thinking more of like an actual family member representing, being part of this, Dawson panel. I was
going to call
the Dawson panel, just in honor of that family.
Sure.
But it would actually end up being like, a delegated member of the family of the victim, of the case. And should the individuals get convicted of said charges, they are basically presented with a menu of conviction options that they directly get to choose.
Got you. So it's bringing the victims to be a part of the prosecution process.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Because I understand right now all they really do is get consulted and they get to testify as to what they think should happen. Well, in this case, they actually would actually get to decide what happens.
Wow, that's something. That's pretty heavy right there. Hey, Sean, I appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for checking in. Oh man, that puts the whole conversation in a different space. The Dawson panel. Let's go to Monica in Harlem Park. We got James and then Donna. Monica, talk to me. What's your take on this, sis? What you think of an idea like a Dawson panel?
Well, I kind of heard it, but my mom was just so concentrating on this new law that the governor wants to come up with. The first thing I would say is I think it's a bad law because, number one, all of that stuff is already online. You can go online right now, and you can find out who the judge is in somebody's case, what their sentencing was, when their court date is. So a lot of that stuff is already out there. And I feel like it would tie the judge's hands because all circumstances are different. You may have had a 16-year-old child driving a car that mistakenly ran over a police officer. Imagine if that stuff is made public and put in the record and it ties the judge's hands. If he had been lenient, I really think that was just too much of a sentence for that type of thing. Not that when you do something wrong, the bottom line is you should pay for it. No matter what it is,
right.
You should pay for it because that is our system, and I know people want justice. But, when it comes to the governor, I personally think that everything that he does is, number one, to undermine Baltimore State's attorney. That's number one. And number two, I don't think that he really have Baltimore in mind in terms of some of the crime that's going on and some of the things that are happening because his only focus and concentration is on law enforcement.
Mm.
And I understand you can't spend more money on law enforcement when you don't have people that want to apply for the jobs. That's senseless. If you give them $54 million, $100 billion more, the only place that's going to go to is more overtime because they don't have a welcoming police force. People feel like they're racist, and nobody wants to be a part of that police force. They can't recruit people. That's the problem. It's not the money. That's the problem. So the only thing they're going to do is take that money and build more jails, and it will lead into other things. They could get to the root problem of it so that the crime can stop. Don't just keep on locking the people up. You got to get to the root of it so we can find out why are people killing each other in that way.
But here's the question, though, Sister Monica. Don't we need to have a couple of, kind of going down a couple of different paths? One should be, trying to get to the root of the problem, but then you got to address the problem as it's happening right now. We're still getting people are still being murdered right now. And so,
without a doubt, that's what I said, brother. I said, that if somebody commits an offense, then they should be punished. But just like the sister said, we don't have the proper lights in our community. They got cameras everywhere. None of these cameras work. So when something happened in Canton, they arrested that person 3 days later. So if he want to spend some money on putting more lights in our community. Spend some money on making sure that every single camera work. Don't none of them work. So that's just a misappropriation of funds, and it's another effort to undermine our state's attorney and what's going on, because the people do work hard here to try to curb that
crime. No doubt.
But we got to come up with some bigger and better solutions than what that joker's talking about.
All right, Monica checking in from Holland Park. Thank you so much for checking in, Monica. Always good to hear from you. Let's go to Will out of Pikesville. Will, what's your take on it, sir?
Well, I tell you right now, I've talked to a few people that I'm pretty sure lived the wrong way years ago, and they were almost in tears when they expressed how thankful they were to God that they now had a high-paying job. I believe that the government is allowing most companies to outsource, foreign countries manufacturing goods Americans once produced. Trump talks about that, but he's done nothing whatsoever, to my knowledge, to bring back actual jobs to the United States. Now, I do believe lack of jobs has a lot to do with it. I talked to a man a few years ago, a young guy in his 20s. He wanted to join the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
He was having a hard time getting in. He was saying he'd rather be killed in the Marines than be killed out in the street. And the last thing I want to say, I've said this before already, a lot of these things people talk about, they make sense. But you have to be realistic. We can't afford to spend several million more dollars, the taxpayers' money. I think that, as I've said before, start giving people lie detector tests. These guys that have police record or guys that are out in the street looking suspicious, you got to change the law. If you start asking these people, have they shot anybody lately? Do they know anybody shot anybody? You'd have almost half of them locked up within a month.
I hear you.
You can clean the streets up very easily like that.
All right. Hey, Will, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for checking in. Let me hear from Ayana in Baltimore.
How you doing, Faraji?
Hey, Ayana, how you feeling?
I'm perplexed, my brother. I just last night watched the documentary by Bryan Stevenson called True Justice.
Uh-huh.
I think we all should take a look at that. Bottom line is our system has a legacy of corruption, and it's been that way. It was built, on a foundation of corruption. And so it's like you're still building upon that foundation. And a faulty foundation, anything on a faulty foundation will not truly stand. So it's like what they're trying to do now is more of the same. It sounds like the old Nixon Law and Order. It's going right back to the same type of structure, if you get what I'm saying, that was already faulty. Like, you can't build a new structure on an old, shaky, wrong, corrupt foundation. It's going to fall. All of these things are code for, you're going to lock more black people up, more black men up, incarcerate them, what I'm saying? And then the other thing is that it's like, okay, so fine, there are some people, many people, in fact, however you want to number it, that need to be put on the carpet, what have you. But what are the systems in place? Like, what are the systems in place that can actually be preventative measures? I'm a teacher. It's like we're the last line of defense before these young people that are already under traumatized issues. You know what I'm saying? In their development. Then they go out in the street because there's no options for them. This is about survival. It's a dog-eat-dog. It's crabs in a barrel mentality. So, like, what you're trying to do is you're locking up people, but if there were programs provided, job training, education, and we have to really, really get ourselves to understand, like, what you, like, you locking up, you want to lock up these squeezy kids, These are kids that are, this is the last resort. Can I clean your window so I don't have to go out here and shoot somebody in the head and take their purse?
Well, let me ask you this. But Ayanna, do we do ourselves a disservice? And I got to let you go, Ayanna. Do we do ourselves a disservice as black people by creating this narrative that poor black children, that if they don't do a squeegee, if they're not squeegeeing, like there are no other options? Do we do ourselves a disservice? Because I feel like, you know, many of us, and I'm saying us, me, you, we had options, folks. We had options. And I'm wondering if we are doing ourselves a disservice by making excuses as if these children today, these young people today are not capable, are not able in some way, shape, or form to make the decisions, to make the sacrifice, to have the commitments, to put themselves on a track that will have, make sure that they are not victims or victims of violence or perpetrators of violence in this city. Do we do ourselves a disservice? Because I'm listening. But guess what? Somebody got us. I mean, of course, not all of us, but somebody stepped in into our lives and made sure that our heads was on straight relatively, right? So we got to look at that, because if it's getting to a space, it's like, if they don't squeegee, therefore they have no other options. I'm pushing back on that. I'm pushing back. I never squeegee a day in my life, but I got jobs. I got opportunity. I got my first job at 15 years old at a restaurant downtown scrubbing floors. If somebody can scrub your windshield, they can scrub your floors, because I was a busboy at a restaurant in the Inner Harbor. And I got that through my sister. So my point is, do we do ourselves a disservice by even accepting that the next generation is disempowered in some way, shape, or form? Look, folks, I'm going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we're going to start the conversation with Baltimore City State's Attorney, Ms. Marilyn Mosby. She's going to join us, and then we're going to continue just for a few more moments after the first hour, after the break at the 6 o'clock hour. So stay riding with us. It's For the Culture here on WEAA. Peace and welcome back to For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, we are joined by our very own state's attorney at this point in the conversation. She's going to give us some insight about a few of the battles that she has been involved in and get her take on a couple of the local issues that we've been talking about here so long. So she is certainly no stranger to the airwaves of WEAA 88.9 FM, and we are certainly grateful for her time this evening. So let's welcome back now to the airwaves, of course, of WEAA and to For the Culture, Madam State's Attorney, Ms. Marilyn Mosby. Madam State's Attorney, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm hanging in there.
I hear you. You got a lot of things that you're working on. You stay busy.
I'm trying. They keep me busy.
You stay busy.
On top of being mommy, I'm trying to get over, like, both my girls last week had the flu, so.
Oh, man. That's never good.
No, it's never good.
It's never good. How
are they
feeling?
Because they don't care. They don't care, you mommy. I mean, you state's attorney. They're like, mommy, hold me. I'm sick.
Right. So.
And, of course, they passed their germs and their cooties to me.
Oh, my gosh. No, you did not. No.
But I don't have the flu. I'm good.
I hope not. No. Well, Madam State's Attorney, let's just start here. I mean, this is, you know, crime and violence is a hot-button issue in the city of Baltimore, as you know. There's been a lot of discussion. The governor, we were talking about it earlier, mentioned the urgent crisis of violence here in the city of Baltimore in his State of the State address. Can you give us an update on what your office is doing, considering that I heard a couple of different numbers, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this. It was reported that the clearance rate of homicide cases in the city of Baltimore is around 21%. I heard it could be a little bit higher, around 30%. Where are we in terms of actually solving the murder cases in our city?
So I just had the opportunity of presenting in front of the Maryland legislature on Friday about a public safety. I sat down along with Commissioner Harrison as well as Mayor Jack Young. And one of the things that I pointed out is that I appreciate the governor's concern and his sense of urgency in addressing the crime in Baltimore. But I do believe that we have to stop with the finger pointing and the vitriol and the blame. And it's time to collaborate and really get down to business. You know, I've gone on record and given 5 solutions to the governor with reference to what I think can address crime. And I don't believe just putting more resources and increasing sentences are going to do the job. Like what the past 25 years has shown us is that that doesn't work. You know, putting more resources towards police, putting more resources towards prosecutors. And one of the things that is actually being proposed by the governor in his budget is to give $1.9 million to, in essence, replicate my office, to give $1.9 million to create 25 new prosecutors in the Attorney General Brian Frosch's office. Mm. So I have gone on record and said that this is absolutely ridiculous. Not only is it a concern in that it's a replication of an office, a local prosecutor's office. Brian Frosch wasn't elected state's attorney. But more importantly, it's the potential for disparate enforcement of policies, right? So bail, sentencing, I don't prosecute marijuana, right? Does that mean that Brian Frosch is going to prosecute marijuana? It has major sort of implications for the governor to assign my authority to Brian Frosch and then to give him and fund 25 additional prosecutors that are going to do this same exact work that my prosecutors do. So I was in Annapolis last week and I was basically proposing to the legislature that we strike that from the governor's budget and we reallocate that towards the services and the holistic approach that the governor should be taking when it comes to trying to get to the root causes as to why crimes take place. One of the things that I talked about in my letter to the governor a past couple of months ago is to collaborate to solve more homicides and increase the homicide clearance rate. So as you've already noted, last year we had a year-to-date, so that's year-end clearance rate, meaning the number of homicides that were solved in the year 2019 that took place in 2019 was a 21% clearance rate.
Right.
So that means the police department are solving 1 out of 5 cases overall.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is crazy, right? Like, you think about, well, what's happening? How are these individuals, you know, time and time again, these are repeat offenders? Well, if you're only solving one out of five cases in homicide, these individuals are still out on the streets wreaking havoc in our communities. And so how do we increase that clearance rate? And when they say the 31% clearance rate, it's actually 32%. That is inclusive of homicides that were solved that may have happened prior to 2019.
So it could have happened in 2018.
Correct. It can be something that was solved. The homicide took place in 2018, but it was solved in 2019.
Right.
And so that's the 32% that you're referencing.
Right.
And the 21% is the year in. That's what we were solved.
Madam State's Attorney, we're going to take a quick pause.
Sure.
When we come back, we're going to get more conversation about that. Plus, you talked about, and I want to certainly hear your latest thoughts about, you know, your defense of Ms. Kim Gardner out of the top prosecutor in St. Louis and in the stand that you took down there. And then just moving on, looking at all that is happening in our city, especially given the fact that there's a lot of talk among the mayoral cases. Just want to... What would you recommend that they really address in their crime plan that is actually going to work?
No, I agree.
You know what I mean? Because I don't feel like these candidates are really saying it. Something is missing, Madam State's Attorney.
I definitely have ideas.
No, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, more with Baltimore City State's Attorney, Ms. Marilyn Mosby, and a whole lot more. So stay riding with me. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.